I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here, producers Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol, and Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, our senior contributor. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
You can tell your friends, no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do, at WNPR.org. All right, escargot. It arrives at your table. It's sizzling in that butter garlic sauce.
Yum.
These snails, though, are canned and from France, guaranteed. So Taylor Knapp and Sean Nethercott on the East End of Long Island want to change that. They're on Kickstarter asking for funds to start the first and only domestic escargot farm.
That's too cool.
Isn't that amazing? You can find out more at peconicescargot.com. P-E-C-O-N-I-C.
Maybe that'll bring escargot back.
Heads up, snail lovers.
I wonder what's involved in that.
Well, let's get them on the show and find out.
Yeah. What makes them special snails? What makes them escargots?
You mean as opposed to the ones crawling outside your door?
It's just, no, it's the variety, just like anything, right?
I haven't a clue.
Yeah, it's a type of snail that you can't just eat your garden slug.
Good to know. What kind of snails are the little pin?
Yeah, I don't know the names of them.
Periwinkles?
I don't know what the names are, but I know it's a specific
What are the little tiny English ones that I had when I was growing up?
Was this in the garden? Was this when you were a child sitting in the garden going,
they eat them like mussels in England.
Just out on the driveway.
Okay.
Little salt.
All right, taco fans. We have taco fans.
I love tacos.
I'm a huge taco fan. So just returned from a wedding in Newport, Rhode Island. Jamestown is right at the edge of Newport. And if you're thinking of a Newport getaway, stop in Jamestown. Why? Because Jake Rojas has opened the Shack at Dutch Harbor, and he is killing it in the taco department. Until Columbus Day, so there's still time, he's making, among others, braised pork and pork belly tacos.
Mm. Yum.
Long lines to get him. He's a down-home Texan. He loves his Mexican food, and you can Google Jake Rojas, R-O-J-A-S, Jake Rojas. He's doing this in Providence also. So if you Google his name, you can find out where he's doing these tacos across Rhode Island, including the Shack at Dutch Harbor Boatyard in Jamestown. That's Jake Rojas, R-O-J-A-S.
Road trip.
Yes.
I'll drive for a taco.
That's interesting, because when I think of tacos, I always think of the standard stuffings.
Ground beef.
Right, or turkey, or chicken, and that's really mixing it up there.
There's a great standard taco that I had in Mexico, and for instance, on the East End of Long Island, La Fondita.
Yeah.
It's a Mexican place, and Nick and Tony's owns it. So this is in East Hampton, and they do very traditional tacos, and one of them is pork and pineapple.
Ooh.
So it's got, you know, stewed pork and onions and pineapple, and that pork
that
has been
amazing.
Marinated in garlic and wine and lime juice, and they are really delicious.
And that's all you put on it, right? You don't need
No, you can put anything on it. So I add hot sauce and all kinds of more lime juice. Hmm.
The taco is just a good vessel to eat just about.
Do you eat hard shell or soft shell?
I like the soft shell.
I actually eat both, but I think I like the soft shell better.
Yeah, I used to like the hard shell, but now I'm big since I go to Mexico often. I'm now converting to a soft shell guy.
Chris, you gave us the best tip about tacos in a soft shell. When I make them at home, they had been so moist and runny with tomato water after dicing the tomatoes that they would fall apart in my hand. And you said the secret you learned in Mexico.
Yeah, so when they make their salsas and stuff in their taco fillings, what they do is they blanch the tomatoes first. And it's just a quick in and out of boiling water. And that really gets
Not just to remove the skin.
No, it's not just to remove the skin. It's just to cook them a little bit. And that removes a little bit of the moisture. So it makes the tomato a little drier.
It's
and that is
counterintuitive, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because you think boiling would add. No, it actually pulls liquid out. And then you let it strain. And when you strain it out of the boiling water, you let it drain for a couple of minutes. And all that water runs out and it comes a little drier. And I also think toast the tortillas, so lightly toast it. So even though it is not a hard shell, but I take a dry pan and then take the tortilla, corn or flour, and put it in a pan with nothing in it on medium high heat just to warm it through. And you can even take it to where it gets a little crispy.
Where can we buy real corn tortillas? Isn't somebody making them the way they do in Mexico?
Or go
in
where Latin the America? People
where,
are.
Where? I, but I
Hartford
look.
has a Spanish section, and I'm sure New Haven does too. You have to go to these little bodegas.
I went to some bodegas. There are a lot of Mexicans on the east end of Long Island, and I went to bodegas, and they have packaged, you know, corn tortillas too. Yeah. And so it's not somebody's homemade ones.
Oh,
and
you
I think,
homemade.
What a business we could have going,
you know what?
If someone made masa. You know?
I know someone, they don't live here, they live in the Midwest, but they go to a restaurant where they know that they make them fresh, and they ask them, can I buy like a dozen to put in my freezer, or two
idea.
Dozen
We've
to put in my freezer.
This.
So find a Mexican restaurant that's making them and just buy a
All
stack.
Right.
When
Here's
you're
what
there.
To do. Talk to us on Facebook. Search the Faith Middleton Show. Okay? Search the Faith Middleton Show. And if you know a place where there is somebody in the back making real corn tortillas, please let us know, because we're going to go there.
There's
and
a
buy
difference.
Lots of them.
There's a real difference.
Oh, real difference. All right, before we get to my favorite turkey black bean chili with dark chocolate, that dark chocolate makes it amazing, by the way. Let me tell you how easy it is to make your own lemon liqueur. I'm talking about limoncello. Mm. So this is easy, easier than you can believe. And you pop it in a pretty bottle. What presents for the holiday? You can go online right now to our website to see the recipe, WNPR.org, for this recipe. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. How easy is it? All right, I use a version of Andrew Schloss's recipe. He's going to be with us in just a little while. It's simple, and it is lemony delicious. But I have a twist on this recipe, because I jack up the lemon flavor in my version. I love lemon, and if you're going to love this if you love lemon, because all you need is zest from lemons, my twist, which is a little fresh lemon juice, vodka, and sugar.
Yum.
That's all
that
it is to make limoncello. Yeah. So it's such a refreshing way to end dinner, just the way they do on the Amalfi Coast of Italy. And I'm delighted to share this simple recipe at our site online, WNPR.org. Just click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. And I repeat that because we get a lot of emails from people saying, where do I find it? The reason I put the real lemon juice in is that it really does boost the lemony flavor. You've got that bitterness from the zest in limoncello that you buy in bottles, even from Amalfi. But very few people put actual lemon juice in. And I've never understood why. And because it makes it so lemony and wonderful. So that's what I do. Now, what happens is a lot of people keep their limoncello in the freezer because it's so good when it's poured
cold.
Oh,
it's like syrupy.
But, well, it's a little thinner when you add your own lemon juice. Okay. But it also gets ice shards in it.
Oh, because the little lemon crystals.
Yeah, because they freeze. So I just take it out, 15 minutes before I'm going to serve it.
Yeah.
So if you go online to try the fresh lemon juice limoncello adapted from Andrew Schloss's recipe, just go to WNPR.org and click on Programs to find the Faith Middleton Show. That recipe is up there, and so are the other recipes we talk about on the show, including the chili recipe, which is my favorite turkey chili ever. Ground turkey, black beans, and dark chocolate to make it rich and interesting.
Yeah, and farm stands are still going. And
I love them.
And this time of year, it's so exciting to see the transition between the summer stuff and the fall stuff, like the pumpkins and the butternut squash and acorn squash,
parsnips.
All that. Oh, parsnips and turnips and more beets. And yeah, it's a really cool transition, I think. From going from the fruiting crops like tomatoes and stuff like that, and or even just the summer squash to the fall squash.
And a lot of these farm stands are staying open, and farmers markets are staying open at least through Thanksgiving, and more now all year long.
Right.
Yeah, cellar crops are coming back. Isn't that cool? I mean, this is going way back to when the start of the country, right? A lot of these farms are bringing back the root cellar. And, people are like, how are they growing stuff? And how are they doing these farm stands in the middle of the winter? Well, two things. One, the cellars are being reactivated, so they're storing stuff. And then the other thing, those tunnels now are great. Have you seen those?
No.
They're also called hoop houses. And what they are, just – Jonathan, have you seen them?
No, but I like the word
hoop house. Yeah, they're just half circle like metal rod that they stick in the ground, and it could be as tall as 5-6 feet hoop, you know, tall, or it could be very small ones, and then they just cover it with plastic, and then you can grow in there. I know my farmer at Holcomb Farm, she was out there in the middle of the winter shoveling snow off her hoop house so I could have fresh spinach all winter long.
This doesn't get sunk into the ground. It's just a cover.
It's just around, like the word is great. It's a hoop house.
So you could do this with old windows that you hinge together, right? And just do it as a square.
And there are some crops that actually...
Would that work?
Yeah, totally. And there's some crops that actually do well. They like the spinach. I don't even serve spinach in the summer anymore. It is so much better in the dead middle of the winter when it's 20 below out. This stuff really shuts down, looks like it's frozen. And then when a little bit of sun hits it, it comes right back and it's crisper and has more flavor than anything you can
and
grow.
Sweeter.
So remember,
and sweeter,
yeah,
too.
And yeah. And on that topic, Lori, my brother-in-law forgot that he had planted carrots and they were under a big pile of leaves in the winter. And so it's 20 below. It's January. He digs them up and it was like eating sugar. They were so delicious.
Yeah.
Really delicious.
Magic.
I wonder if they're still filled with all the vitamins and minerals, even though they've sugared over a little bit.
Oh, they're heaven.
Wanted to let you know that I'm part of a campaign. If you go to buyctgrown.com, you will find our encouragement here on the Food Schmooze to join what we call the 10% local campaign. So to spend 10% of your food and gardening dollars locally. That's at buyctgrown.com. Before we get to our turkey chili, just wanted to tell you we received a letter. It came in the actual mail.
Snail mail?
Gail
Brown.
That
still happens?
Who used a stamp and everything in Preston, Connecticut. And she said, yet another way to cook bacon. I guess she was wandering around Ocean State job lot.
Love
and
that place.
Found this barbecue bacon tray. So it's a tray for the barbecue. That's like a little tent. And you put the bacon strips on it and put the tray up on top of your barbecue grill. And it does the bacon. And she sent me coupons in case I go there.
I'll take that. Because,
no,
I'll take
Gail,
that.
You're
hand,
the best food schmooze listener. All right,
I'm
here,
an
Chris,
ocean.
You can have that.
Listen, you can find really cool stuff. And we have one in my area at Job Lot.
And thank you all for your contact about Mary's Marvelous. This is the place in East Hampton and Amagansett on the east end of Long Island. Makes incredible stuff there. Her arepas, unbelievably delicious. These cheesy kind of bready things. They're just incredible. It's a Mexican staple. But I gave her a thumbs up for the best packaged chocolate cookie on the planet. And even though they are in one place and you might be in another, you can just contact the store and they will ship them to you, which is, these are
dangerous.
Irresistible. They're called Korova, K-O-R-O-V-A Sablé. So in other words, it's a chocolate butter cookie and it is to die for. It is unbelievable. Go to marysmarvelous.com.
I thought those were the best cookies ever. Chocolate, chocolate, chocolate.
She's already put her order in.
I know. All right.
I was wondering where she ran to the computer.
Yes.
What are you doing, Lori? No, nothing.
All right. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry. More mouthwatering conversation and fun here on the Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans not cornbread out of sight. Cornbread said, "Now that's all right. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night, and I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night."
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m., Saturdays at noon. You can discover our great guest and topic lineup. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Also, you can find all the recipes, cookbooks, everything we're talking about here on the show at our website, WNPR.org. Click on Programs to find the Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented team, Jean Amatruda, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, Marion Roy, producer Jonathan McNichol, and Lori Mack. It is great to have you listening on the show. We're going to talk now about Andrew Schloss's new book. He's going to join us in just a little bit on the show. We have an amazing wine to go with this next recipe, which is my favorite turkey chili ever. It has this wonderful note in it and a stealth ingredient. We're going to tell you in a second. So Andrew Schloss is joining us shortly. His book is called Cooking Slow. And Chris, why wouldn't I ask Chris Prosperi to make this? Because he has 9 slow cookers.
Ten.
Okay, so we did this turkey chili recipe. You can do it in a Dutch oven
oven. But why would you?
You can do it in a slow cooker. And Chris did it in the slow cooker. So this is slow-cooked turkey chili. And the stealth ingredient in this is dark chocolate. So it's a chocolate cocoa powder, unsweetened. And it gives it that dusky, complex note in addition to all the other great things. How easy was this turkey chili? Easy.
This was actually one of the easiest chilies I've ever made in my life. And I'm amazed at the flavor that came out of this. I mean, and again, it's not a lot of stuff. You saute a little bit of chopped onion.
And before you go through this, because I wanted to say, Laura, you made the best comment when we were eating just now, and you said, I forgot we weren't eating beef.
I did. The texture and the flavor.
This deep richness that you were just talking about. That's where it gave it that kind of meaty flavor.
What happens is that, as Andrew says, what makes a chili great, chilies are more complex than we think to make them really great. And when you get the meat feeling like it's practically melting into the sauce the way this one does, then you have got a great chili. This is why this is my favorite turkey chili. This has dark chocolate in it and some onions and a serrano chili and the ground turkey, of course, and garlic, a little salt and pepper, some cumin seed, some oregano, standard chili powder, a little bit of cornmeal and chicken broth, a can of crushed tomatoes, the unsweetened cocoa powder, a can of black beans. That's what we use. You can use other kinds of beans if you want. And on top, we put out an array of things. So, Chris, I want you to tell us how quickly this came together. Again, the recipe is on the site. I'd love for you to make this. My favorite.
5 minutes once you got everything chopped. So, again, saute an onion. Very simple. Throw in your serrano chili. Get that going. You cook that, for about 30 seconds till the flavors start developing. You add garlic, your ground turkey. You break up your ground turkey a little bit and get that cooking so it, doesn't lump together. You add a good amount of salt and pepper. And then after that goes your spices. So ground cumin seed, oregano, chili powder, cornmeal. Let that cook for a minute or so. And then you add your chicken broth. Right? And it can just be regular canned chicken broth. You use a low sodium or the sodium amount.
And in with the chicken broth, your can of tomatoes, a little bit of that cocoa powder.
And then your secret ingredient.
That is the stealth ingredient. And, we want to thank Andrew Schloss for this idea. Yeah. You stir in those black beans.
Yeah.
You cover the pot. You can either put it in the oven or it's in your slow cooker.
Yeah, on low 5 to 7 hours overnight.
Yeah. I mean, it is. And Chris, you did it that way before you went to bed. And what happened? You get up.
Get up in the middle of the night. And I'm like, and I couldn't remember that right before I went to bed, I turned the thing on and I'm like, I kept smelling. Oh, I'm like, what is that?
It's the way this studio smells right now.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And all those spices, that's right. And the cocoa powder adds that complexity to it that you wouldn't get in a regular chili.
Jonathan, you're a chili lover. What'd you think of this one?
I love it. I actually prefer turkey chili over beef chili. And Laurie's right. It's so good.
You couldn't tell, I don't think. That richness that you get from the cocoa. And also remember that cornmeal adds something to it too. There's an ingredient you don't see in too many chilies.
So, what does the cornmeal do?
Well,
it
thickens it. And again, adds a depth, right? Because when you get something that has a little heavier viscosity, it feels like it's more rich. And more rich will bring your brain, when you're eating it, thinking more like beef, right? And here you have low-fat turkey.
Do you think you could do this a vegetarian style? You know how I used that crumble from the produce section in the grocery store to make turkey chili without the turkey? And you really can't tell the difference. But I don't know if slow cooking it would make a difference in the crumble. if that would do anything to it or not. So it'd be a good little, maybe I'll have to try it.
An experiment. Yeah. That's a good thing.
Experiment. I think, again, the key to the slow cooking is the flavor developing, right? And so, the aroma. So, I mean, that's what really comes out in the slow cooking is the flavor of, like, if you cook this for an hour, the way you taste the spices is going to be one way versus if you cook this low for 5 to 7 hours, you get more depth in those spices.
Well, plus there's the beans in this, I noticed, were particularly soft. The one thing I don't like about beans and chili is that they're like hard. A total different texture in the middle of everything. But that wasn't true of this, which I liked a lot.
Okay, so and here's my tip for handling a recipe that calls for a lot of spices, because spices can be expensive when you're buying them in the supermarket. And we love having our supermarkets, but who wants to spend $40 on spices?
To make chili.
So, yeah. I mean,
to make turkey chili.
Please go to your local health food market, because most often they have... In covered bins only, by the way. In covered bins, a big turnover on spices. They are a fraction of the cost. I could buy all the spices in this recipe for a couple of bucks.
Yeah, that, tablespoon
and
of
this is how I do it. So I get double the amount I need every time. I go to the register and they'll say, for this cumin seed, they'll say, 27 cents, please. I'm not kidding. So if it calls for a tablespoon of ground cumin in here, I will buy 2 tablespoons in case the next recipe calls for something. That way my spices stay fresh. It doesn't cost a fortune. I know last minute you have to spring for what's in the supermarket, but you don't have to be at the mercy of how expensive spices are.
It could be $5 for like 2 tablespoons of cumin seed.
It's more like $7.
And you use it once or twice, and then it goes bad.
And then flavors wane after. Like I said, I always tell the story of my black peppercorns that I've had since '86. So, I've now marked it, and I'm not throwing them away now because I've had them so long. They're like a friend in the kitchen. No, I would never use them, but every time I move, I pack them and take them along. It's a metal can. When was the last time spices were sold in a metal can?
Listen, I've got a great wine to tell you about to go with turkey chili and so much else. But I wanted to say, if you are saying, I've got to make this, you know you can find it in Andrew Schloss's book, and he is coming up. We're going to be talking with him shortly. But also, it is on our website, thanks to Andrew and the publisher. My absolute favorite turkey chili, because it has dark chocolate in it and complex layers from the array of spices that are in here. And just go to WNPR.org for the instructions. Just click on programs. You'll see the Faith Middleton Show and everything we talk about, including this wine. Wasn't this great?
That was delicious.
I'm going to tell you.
I'm shocked on the price.
Isn't this amazing?
I'm shocked on the price.
This is a red wine from Italy. It is $10 to $12. Let me tell you about this.
It can't be.
It is $10 to $12. Now, the store I went into this morning when I picked this up, it was $12. But you certainly can find this for $10. So it is called... You don't have to write this down yet, because I'm going to tell you the easy way. And if you can't write it down right now, just go to our website. You'll see it written down for you. It's a Marchese di Barolo. In other words, this is a Barbera Maria. And it is just so rich and wonderful. This is an Italian Barolo. $10 to $12 again. We've got red berry fruit in here, a hint of vanilla and oak. It's just full of life. It was last year the top 100 wines.
Wow.
Yeah, $10 to $12. And this would be great if you're not doing turkey chili. It'd be great with roasts and pork loin and burgers with cheddar or Gouda. It is a deal. This
roast turkey for Thanksgiving.
This is my Thanksgiving one. You know what? This is a great. If you want to shop ahead and get this for Thanksgiving, an idea that is at this price, $10, $12 a bottle. Be great with turkey.
Turkey meatloaf?
What is turkey?
Our turkey meatloaf recipe online.
That would have been
dreaming about great, that turkey meatloaf.
Yeah. I made one last night. It's called Mexican turkey meatloaf, where you put a little bit of cheese, you put some spices in it, and you also use some salsa and some grated carrots. So it's a kind of a sneaky way to get some vegetables in for the kids.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
And it's delicious. And I bet that wine would have been terrific.
It would have been.
For the adults.
This can go with so much. So if you go online, here's what to write down if you're writing this down. You say, if it's not on the shelf at your wine store, as it was at my store this morning, then you just say, the importer is Frederick Wildman. Frederick Wildman. And then you say, I would like... The Barbera Maria. Maria means little rascal. And so this
and
is,
it is.
It's fitting.
It is a rascal. It's got that little bit of spice and red berry. So Mariah is spelled M-A-R-A-I-A. Barbera Mariah. It's a 2011. It might be a 2012 when you find it. It's just a great wine house. And so whatever year it is, they're going to do well with this.
Simple and yummy.
Yes,
it
that's good.
Is good. Okay, so go online, WNPR.org. Click on programs. You'll see the Faith Middleton Show. You'll find the turkey recipe. You'll find how to make your own limoncello, except with a twist so that it has lemon juice, which is what I love to do. And I think you will love it if you love lemons. Mm. And we've got our wine, the turkey chili, everything you could ask for. Chris, before we get to Andrew Schloss, I wanted to ask you something about this turkey chili. It has chocolate in it. This is, as you were pointing out earlier, this is a typical Mexican thing to do.
Yeah. And somehow when it came over here, and I don't know the whole history of how chili came over, but I'm sure it's Texas, New Mexico, that area. I find that the cocoa powder got dropped out of the recipes. And I can't figure out why is it. Is it because we didn't have the cocoa here, or was it because, you know, because we do grow the spices here, or was it simply because that we didn't think cocoa could be in a savory dish? So it's interesting to see. But down there, in the chili con carne that they do down there, and all of them, they all have just a little bit of cocoa. And again, if you look at the recipe, it's not like a lot of cocoa where you're like, wow, this is chocolate. It's more like you said, the background note.
Yeah.
The depth, the richness it adds to a savory dish. It, to me, in a lot of the dishes I use cocoa in, it's as important as chocolate in a dessert. You know, that it adds that kind of depth to a dessert. It adds that kind of depth. And again, bitter, not sweet chocolate, but bitter chocolate.
Since you're talking about depth, I want to say that one of the things that we do, and Chris did this when we just had this turkey chili, is we put out a whole array of little condiments. So we had some diced up jalapenos that you could put on your bowl. We had some cheddar cheese.
Chopped tomato.
Anything you want that you think it would be fun on chili.
This I got from you, actually, which is funny because I remember doing this in Mexico, but we did chili here a while ago. I think it was a vegetarian one. And I watched you, and it brought me back to being in Mexico. You were squeezing fresh lime on it.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever I have chili, even at home or whenever I have chili now, even in Mexican restaurants when I order chili, I ask for lime wedges on the side. And again, you don't think about it here because we're not used to that. But if you just take – and I keep it on the side, and I don't squeeze the whole wedge on there, just a little bit as I eat. And then as I get through it, just to freshen it up, like say you're a quarter of the way in, just squeeze a little bit more on top, and it brings all those flavors right back up to the top.
Makes them pop somehow.
Yeah,
I don't know what
right?
the chemistry is.
And I got that. I remember just sitting across from you going, why is she? And then I was like, oh, yeah, they do that in Mexico.
It's not a fair trade because I get so much more from your tips. So,
but that is a good one for things like chili. Right? A little squeeze of lime on top.
That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. On the subject of chocolate, it's interesting because in the old days when you were making coq au vin, which is the wine and chicken stew, they used to put, when they first made it, rooster blood to darken the sauce and give it
recipe.
A note. The original, in the early days, that's how coq au vin was made. Yeah. And of course, and they would use an actual rooster instead of a chicken. And it cooked that long because the rooster meat was tough. Mm-hmm. That's how it all started. Then it became a beautiful chicken.
Yeah.
And then the rooster blood went away. And in many recipes, you'll see the stealth ingredient. They put chocolate or cocoa powder in to mimic the complexity of the rooster blood.
Yeah,
wow, that's interesting.
So now we have the French doing it too.
Yeah, and I mean, I think cocoa is one of those, you know, there are a few things that grow naturally that you're just like, wow, tell me cocoa is not one of those things in the world that you go, wow.
Chris, you might not know, but are there other cultures besides Central and South America, besides the French, do other cultures put a cocoa or chocolate in food?
See, I don't think, not that I know, because it's from those places, right? And I think that's the funny part. You don't even think about France and chocolate because they just brought it over there. But it's primarily grown in, you know, Central Latin America and South America. I mean, that's where the cocoa actually is grown. And I think in parts of Africa also. And the islands too have.
So would it be an African cooking? I wonder. We're going to have to find out.
Yeah. No, I think it's a new thing there. It's not indigenous, but I think they have the same climate. So they are starting to grow some down there.
This has got me thinking about how often you could use cocoa powder or a little bit of chocolate in other dishes to add a note of
Beef soup. And say you're using canned beef broth, right? Which doesn't it's a great cheater's ingredient. I use it all the time when I'm cooking at home. But it doesn't have the depth of a homemade beef broth. But who wants to go through that trouble to make it? But if you would just add, like, say you made a beef soup. And at the end, just like he does, or just in the middle of the cooking, just add a couple tablespoons. And again, if you're making a big pot, right? Just a little bit just adds that depth. So think of things like stews, like you said, the coq au vin, things like that where you're even when you're tasting it, go, it's a little light or it's a little weak, right? When you're tasting something, those little notes that you can add in the cooking process really bring up those flavors.
Gravies?
Oh my gosh, mole. That's Mexican gravy to me.
What would happen if you put it in the turkey gravy?
Oh my gosh, yes.
No, would it be good?
And I think this is the thing.
Something sounds like a good idea.
No, I think this would be good, but you have to remember the thing with turkey gravy, you always make such a small amount. Right? You don't make like a half gallon of turkey gravy. So you make like this little, because you're using pan dripping. So you want to make sure you just use the teeniest little dusting on top.
Okay. I want to tell you, Andrew Schloss is joining us next with his new book, Cooking Slow, Recipes for Slowing Down and Cooking More. You're going to hear about carrots, slow baked, beets, slow baked, chicken wings, spicy soy chicken wings in the slow cooker, a beef brisket with prunes and oranges in the slow cooker. A triple chocolate cake done in the slow cooker.
Lori's jumping up and down.
How about this? A lemon overnight cheesecake.
You put it
in when you go to bed, and
I'm going to talk to him more about this. I've never baked in my slow cookers.
I did it once.
And?
It was delicious. I made a gingerbread, and it was the most
moist.
It was so moist.
I wonder if you could do that English pudding in it.
Of course you could. Sure. All right. Please support your local food growers and food makers. More delicious conversation. And Andrew Schloss, after a quick break, please stay with us.
I am sitting in the morning at the diner on the corner. I am waiting at the counter for the man to pour the coffee. And he feels it only halfway. And before I even argue, he is.
I bought a toothbrush, some toothpaste, a flannel for my face, pajamas, a hairbrush, new shoes, and a case. I said to my reflection,
I'm Faith Middleton. This is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Follow us on Twitter at FaithWNPR, FaithWNPR. Don't forget, everything we talk about on the show is going to be online at our site. We've been telling you about Andrew Schloss, his turkey chili recipe. You'll find it there. You'll find his book listed there and how to get it. And you just go to WNPR.org and click on programs. You'll see the Faith Middleton Show. Okay, Andrew Schloss, welcome to the show. It is so great to have you here. We love the chili. We just ate it.
Oh, great.
The book is called Cooking Slow, Recipes for Slowing Down and Cooking More. Braising, roasting, grilling, baking, frying, and steaming in all of these recipes. And I want to go right away, Andrew, since we've done turkey chili, to your spicy soy chicken wings, which can be done in the slow cooker. Tell me about them.
Those are a Chinese-style chicken wings, so you're just cooking chicken wings really slowly. Now, what happens when you lower the temperature a lot is that you get much more tender results. So if I'm cooking chicken wings at a high temperature, I'm going to get a lot of crisping as the protein tightens up from the high heat. But if I lower that temperature down to the temperature where the chicken needs to be when it's done, which is around 170, 180 degrees, so I'm cooking these about 225, which is not much above that, cooking them until they're
in the oven,
falling off the bone.
Yeah.
About 3 hours. You can walk away, go play tennis, do whatever you want to do while that's happening. And then you just crank the oven up for about 10 minutes at the end, and that will crisp them up.
So that's in the oven. You also have a variation in the slow cooker.
Yeah, the slow cookers, this book started because I'd written a slow cooker book.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about slow cookers is that what low temperature does to food, and that's what really sort of fascinated me when I was working with slow cookers. The problem with slow cookers is that they trap moisture. And when you trap moisture, you don't get the concentration of flavor that happens when you allow evaporation to happen. So I started doing all of these slow cooker kind of recipe kind of things in the oven and got much nicer results, much more concentrated flavors. You can also do these in the slow cooker. The same thing is basically happening. The oven is set at 225. Mm-hmm. A low slow cooker is around 225.
But for this, you prefer the oven. Okay,
yes.
So a chicken wing, salt and pepper, soy sauce, dark brown sugar, sesame oil, cayenne powder, hot chili powder, and some garlic, and you're good to go. That sounds so good. Let's go to beef brisket with prunes and oranges. And the cooking time in this is 6.5 to 10.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're really proud of this recipe. It's got coffee in it. Go ahead, tell me.
The one thing about this range of temperature in slow cooking, the reason you can have a 4 hour disparity between the minimum cooking time and the maximum cooking time is that everything is happening so slowly that it is almost impossible to overcook food doing this method.
Wow.
So you can really suit the cooking time to your schedule. If you need to be gone all day, this can go 10 hours. If you're hanging around and you don't want it to go all 10 hours, you can go for 6 hours. It's done at 6 hours, but it doesn't get much more done going longer.
So this beef brisket with prunes and oranges has ground coffee and cinnamon and onions, some
celery. It's a great
celery,
combination of flavors.
Garlic,
very,
and brandy and cider vinegar. Dark brown sugar, a V8 juice, and, of course, I mentioned the prunes. And I know you said you would consider this one of your admirable accomplishments in life.
Absolutely. I haven't done much better than this.
Okay, let's go back, because I want to talk with you about your holiday turkey. Lori and I were staring at this. This is a turkey breast that we're looking at. And, you know, the idea is you're slow cooking. So this chills for a long time beforehand in the refrigerator, 12 to 24 hours. And then you're going to cook this turkey breast for the holidays. And it has apple cider and poultry seasoning that goes in the pan with it for 14 hours or more. So, Andrew,
day and a half.
We cannot decide what time we're if we wanted to do this for Thanksgiving, we were trying to figure out what time we'd have to get up.
You could actually do this. Well, let's see. If you wanted it at 6 o'clock at night, you could put this in before you go to bed, and it would probably be okay. Because
so,
the oven is set, you want the turkey to be 170 to 175 degrees when it is done.
So this is
you're setting your oven at 175 degrees, so it's not going to overcook.
Yeah,
no, but it's nighttime.
It's
for people who have nighttime Thanksgiving, not for the afternoon people, or else unless you like getting up at 3 in the morning.
Let's see, if it was afternoon, like what time? I'm a nighttime, so I have no idea.
So, a lot of us eat at 1 or 2 o'clock.
At 1 or 2 o'clock? Well, then you could go... you could still put it in for you.
Midnight, right?
Yeah.
You could do
midnight. 11 o'clock.
Oh, okay. That's
okay.
Right. Yeah. All right. We're good to go on
I'm
that.
I'm happy about that one.
And you cannot overcook this turkey.
Yeah, because your oven temperature never goes above the maximum temperature that the turkey should be cooked at.
Okay.
So
this
it can
is good.
Stay in there.
And it doesn't matter if you're basting or not.
You don't actually need to baste in these methods. The reason you're basting in roasting is because you're cooking at higher temperatures and juices are coming out and you're returning the juices to the meat. But in this method, the cell structure of the animal of meat isn't breaking down, so you're not losing juices. You actually get very few pan juices. So one of the drawbacks is you can't make a lot of gravy from pan drippings in this. Unless, well, you can add stock to the brown bits in the pan, but You're not going to get a lot of liquid out of the meat.
All right, so this is Andrew Schloss, S-C-H-L-O-S-S. He is creator of this cookbook, which we love, Cooking Slow, Recipes for Slowing Down and Cooking More. So these are the techniques: braising, roasting, grilling, baking, frying, steaming, all at a low temperature or slow, including slow cooker style cooking. And so we have, I just don't want to run out of time, carrots that are slow baked on coffee beans for 2 to 3 hours. We have a slow baked beets with an orange gremolata. That sounds so good to me. If we have time, I'll come back to those recipes, but I want to skip along to the dessert section because this, I don't bake, Andrew, and you had me with this triple chocolate cake. This is a cake that is baked at 175 degrees for 4 hours. Mm-hmm. It is heavy cream, light brown sugar, semi-sweet chocolate chopped, vanilla, almond extract, egg yolks, whipped cream and fruit slices for topping it all off. And it goes into a springform cake pan, and you put a piece of parchment or aluminum down, and in a saucepan, you're just heating up cream and sugar, and then the chocolate, and then goes in the vanilla and the extract, egg yolks, and then it gets poured into the pan, and that goes into the oven just like that, the whole thing, for 4 hours.
Yeah, this is basically a chocolate, a very rich chocolate custard. And custards, the thing with custards is if you bake them really slow, just to the temperature that they coagulate at, you get this amazingly smooth, creamy texture from the very middle to the very edge. No part ever overcooks.
Oh, so you invert this onto a cake plate at the end, and then do you refrigerate it before serving, or it goes straight
I would refrigerate it. I mean, you can serve it right away, but it'll be very soft when it first comes out. So letting it set up in the refrigerator is better. And it's called triple chocolate bypass for obvious reasons.
Not even dealing with that. Okay, now, we were talking about doing that turkey breast at, I think, 11 o'clock at night for the holiday. Well, here's another thing that you could do, which is at the same I guess you can't do it at the same time, but if you're lucky enough to have two ovens, this is an
Actually, you could. It's the same.
Is it the same? Temperature. This is an overnight lemon cheesecake. You put this in, go to bed, and you get up 8 to 10 hours later, and your cheesecake is done.
Breakfast.
I was thinking the same thing. That would be my dream breakfast right
Okay,
there.
So here we go. This is a lemon cheesecake, and you can use, you call for cream cheese, but you can also use ricotta. And so you've got a recipe here, just an alteration of ricotta cheesecake, which is what I would do. You could also make it into a chocolate chip cheesecake. But tell me how this works.
This happened because it's a similar thing to what I just said about the chocolate. Cheesecakes are custards, where cream cheese is the dairy product rather than milk. Generally, in custard, you bake them in a water bath, and that is to protect them so that the maximum temperature at the sides of the pan is 212 degrees, because you don't want the edge of a custard to get very hot or it'll split. I realized, many, many years ago, that if I turn my oven down to 200 degrees, I don't need the water bath, because then the oven is no hotter than the water would be. And I can then bake a custard without a water bath very, very slowly, and it's not going to overcook at the edge. I started doing this in my restaurant with cheesecakes, and the only hitch was it took 8 hours to set up. So I decided I didn't have an oven that I could devote for 8 hours, but I did at night. So I would just stick it in when I left the restaurant, and in the morning when I got there, it was done. Yeah, and I've just been baking cheesecakes like that ever since.
Before you go to bed, you preheat the oven to 175, put some a vegetable spray on the cheesecake pan, add some cookie crumbs in the bottom, and so that the cookie crumbs coat the bottom and the sides, and then you mix up all your stuff in a bowl, which is the cream cheese or the ricotta, sugar and the vanilla and the lemon extract, and you add a little limoncello in here and some eggs, and then you pour it in the pan, put it in the oven, you clean up, and you go to bed.
Correct.
And when you wake up, or 8 to 10 hours later, the exact time actually doesn't even matter. The cake is set. The top is barely colored, as you write in the book, and the surface is flawless. You cool it in the pan for an hour, and cover it with some wax paper, invert it on a plate, you refrigerate it, and you are good to go. And you can serve whatever you want with that, some fresh fruit.
That sounds like no fail.
Oh, it absolutely is. And the other cool thing about these cheesecakes is they never crack because they don't rise. The rising happens because if the air happens from beating, start to expand in a hot oven, but the oven never gets hot enough to make the air expand, so they just congeal. They just sort of set up and be creamy and gooey and
delicious.
If you would like to see Andrew's book at our website and the turkey chili recipe that is my favorite turkey chili recipe ever, you can go to our site, WNPR.org. Just click on programs. You'll see the Faith Middleton Show. We've got this wine for you, this Barbera, Little Rascal Barbera here to go with the turkey chili of Andrew's. And we've got his book, Cooking Slow. You'll find it at the site. Let's do some vegetables. These are carrots that you slow bake on top of coffee beans. So this is a temperature of 225, cooking time 2 to 3 hours, slow. And so
on
what do the coffee beans do?
This is a magic recipe. This is a recipe I stole. This is a recipe that's Daniel Patterson's, who has Qua in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And I had this. I sat down in his restaurant. There was this menu item that said carrots/coffee. And it goes, what's that? Yeah. And what came out were these three little carrots, nothing else, just three carrots on a plate. And when you tasted them, they were like infused with this, who knows what, this sort of roasty, toasty, dark flavor. What he had done was slow roast on coffee beans. And slow roasting vegetables is actually not successful because vegetables need a higher heat. What I found with slow roasting on vegetables is they tend to, I like the results better with high heat. So I don't do a lot of slow roasting of vegetables. But on these carrots, by slow roasting on the coffee beans, the oil in the coffee beans oozes out of the coffee beans in this very low temperature. And it just sort of like permeates the carrots so that it's not like carrots rubbed with coffee or poached in coffee or anything. It's like it's carrots that are infused with the spirit of coffee.
I have to try this. I'm stealing this once removed.
Yes, this is going to fly around every restaurant. Medium roast coffee beans, preferably decaf. I see the reason for that. So the carrots are tossed with olive oil and garlic and sea salt and fresh black pepper. And then they're on top of these coffee beans, and that's how that works. And it's 2 to 3 hours. So if you have the time, you can have something pretty great happening and very unusual. Again, the cookbook, some recipes at our site, WNPR.org. Andrew Schloss is our guest. Just click on programs. You'll find the Faith Middleton Show. Slow-baked beets with orange gremolata. Now, gremolata means hazelnuts combined with the zest and juice of an orange, garlic, olive oil, some chopped parsley, and freshly ground black pepper. And this is long-time cooking, 6.5 hours at a temperature of 225 degrees. This serves about 6 people. And what happens to the beets in this slow oven that wouldn't happen cooking them another way?
Generally, when people boil beets, they're going to get less sweet because beets have a lot of sugar in them. But when you boil them, the sugar is water-soluble, and a lot of the sugars go out into the water. So by baking beets, because there's very little moisture surrounding them, the sugars sort of stay in the beets, and they stay very sweet. You can bake beets at higher temperatures, but what happens is the sugars almost caramelize at the edges at higher temperatures, and which is sort of nice. What is really special, I think, about lowering the temperature and letting them go very, very long time is you get almost a beet that's like a poached beet. It's very soft. The sugars are very clean tasting, and it's effortless. And that's what's also cool about a lot of these techniques is they take 10 hours, but you're not there. You don't have to do anything. And because the temperatures are so low, there's no chance you're going to screw this up. There's no chance they're going to overcook.
You don't
have to be there.
Yeah.
So these are
steak-free cooking.
To just add to your cooking repertoire so that you have things that are fast and you have to be there and, you know, they take 10 minutes and you have to watch them the whole time. And you have these recipes that cook half the day, and you can just forget about them.
Andrew, I'm friends with a top cancer doc in L.A., and he said to me he has in his family a history of prostate cancer, and so he does all kinds of research in that area, and he said red beets, the redder the beet, the better, are high in some kind of something, antioxidants or something that counteracts a tendency toward. And so he said, you know, always go for the deepest red beets you can. So there's another aspect of this that's wonderful. Thank you so much for being on the show. Love the book.
Great talking to you.
Okay. Andrew Schloss, his book is Cooking Slow, and you can find it at our website, WNPR.org. Click on Programs to find the Faith Middleton Show. Thanks, everybody. The Food Schmooze airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m., Saturdays at noon. Here's to pleasure, my friends. And remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.